Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 396 for comics originally released on March 11th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Detective Comics Endgame number 1. This is part of the Endgame stuff. Not really an event, not really even a regional incident or whatever. I'm honestly not entirely sure what this is. I have a theory.
Me too.
I think they wound up with an extra issue of a couple of Batman titles that they wanted to kind of get out and before Convergence, because they weren't really at a clean breaking point or something. I don't know.
I was leaning towards cash grab because the crown jewel in DC's line is Batman, and Endgame is coming to a close. And how can we do a Spider-Verse-ish spinoff and capitalize on that event, on that story arc? Well, let's just have some pointless tales with characters that are involved in that and cash in that way. That was my take.
I would agree with the pointless tale aspect. I mean, Brian Bussolato, who's the writer, is also doing, he picked up what, Injustice, Gods Among Us, did a really good job there. And then Rogue Antonia is doing the art here, and the art's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, wow, you should check it out for this, but it tells the story. The story is well told. I was confused by this issue, because spoilers, apparently working with Batwoman and Red Robin, that seemed odd. I guess this is happening during the end of Batman Eternal, but we're not quite there yet. The star of this issue is Lonnie, Anarchy, and this is a less interesting version of the character than we saw pre-Flashpoint over, particularly in the Robin title back a couple of years back. Barely any sign of Batman. I mean, he's in like a panel or two on the first page. This felt like a filler issue to me.
Oh yeah, 100%.
The whole thing was about Lonnie literally getting from point A to point B because his mother's in trouble. This is the kind of thing, were this a secondary, thirdary, you know, tertiary, whatever, issue of an actual event, you would have somewhere in the event somebody saying, well, I've got to go check on my mom, and then he's back, and then, okay. If you skip this, you're not missing anything, but if you read this, you get kind of what you get here. He made it from point A to point B. And the specifics, if you're interested, here they are. If you're not, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make sense for an event-related thing, but either I missed an issue somewhere which really kicked off the whole Endgame stuff, and I don't think I did, or it just hadn't come out yet, or I don't know, this just was a complete miss for me in terms of what was the point of the story, why should I care? I mean, Lonnie, okay, he's Anarchy, I get it. But all these other characters, why should I care about them? Who are they, and are we ever going to see them again? Because there's a couple of kids who are helping Lonnie for no explicable reason.
They're very helpful in this chaotic situation. They kind of just stopped what they were doing and decided to be good Samaritans, which is interesting.
Fascinating, since they particularly know Lonnie from his ability as a hacker in a non-Samaritan-ish way. These seem like people who are not heroes per se, not necessarily villains either, but why would they stop to help this guy they literally just met, except they knew who he was from his online annex.
This is a tough issue because on the one hand, it has a beginning, middle, and end, and it's an okay story. There's nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
The art is fine. It's passable. But on the other hand, it's so just lays there. There's really nothing to it. And I don't feel like we got what we were promised from the title, the cover, and the pitch. You know, it should have been more substantial. To be titled Endgame, it should have been more substantial. I mean, I'm not just faulting DC for this, because there were some inconsequential Spider-Verse tie-ins. And this is what that felt like. And so part of me is feels like I was swindled a little bit. And then part of me is like, well, what should I expect? Of course, this is how it works. There are some of these. And there will be readers out there who want to explore these very tiny little minute diversions from a main storyline that kind of sort of tie back in to the main story that you're reading, but not really very well.
I don't think this tied in at all. This wasn't even a sidebar. This was a...
some of the characters that are in game are in here, and the things that are happening in game are happening in here in the peripheral vision. So in that regard only, they're connected.
Well, I mean, yeah, we've been getting, and I just kind of spaced on the actual end game story arc that was running in one of the other books. Because you're right, that this does tie into that, but in name only?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't recall, and maybe it's just my really poor memory, and I'm sure it quite possibly is that, actually. Did we get any sense that his mom was in trouble? Do we really care? I don't really think he helps her here. This felt so inconsequential, so bland. And it doesn't, it kind of does, but it kind of doesn't live up to the solicitation blurb, which is as follows. The city is overrun by Jokerized victims, but a small band of teenagers unites to make a stand. Their secret knowledge of Gotham City's streets help them survive, but will Batman take help from this young group of upstarts? And what could it mean for the future of the young heroes in Gotham City? Now, hang on a sec. Will Batman take help from this group? I don't know that he ever met them in this issue.
What, I don't think the question was ever asked.
What secret knowledge of Gotham City streets did this group have? The city was overrun by Jokerized victims. I will grant that. Small band of teenagers unite. Okay, I'll grant that. What could this mean for the future of the young heroes in Gotham City? I have no earthly idea. Is it... I mean, there's that We Are Robin title starting up. Maybe these kids are going to be part of that. But there was nothing here for this to really feel like it tied in with the current continuity of what's going on, with Spoiler and with some of these other characters, and nothing at the end to make me think, wow, I should go follow this, that, or the other. Even though it ends with, instead of the end, the beginning.
There is no detective in game number 2, though, right?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
So here's another problem I have. Then, as we get from point A to point B, at the end, it's, you know, there's a crazed mob outside of this, mm-hmm. this location where his mom is, and they figure out how to get through the door and get to his mother. And then they all, you know, high five and all is great, but there's still a crazed mob at the door. And I'm not sure why it's so, well, everything's cool now because we got here, because there's still that same number of crazies outside. Did it seem like it was, did I miss a part of that maybe there was something where once you got in, everybody was going to be safe?
That left me totally perplexed.
Because it's still the same chaos happening.
Whatever trouble his mother was in, he's just now there with her. And this is a little spoilery, but I'm kind of okay with that, because if I don't think somebody should go pick this comic up.
No.
If they've already read it, we're not spoiling it. If they haven't read it, don't. And I hate to say that. Brian Bucciolato is not a bad writer, but this is not a good example of his writing. This is just a pointless issue. And if you're going to say it's the beginning, geez, tell me what it's the beginning of. Tell me what I should go pick up after Convergence.
Yeah, the beginning. Continued in, blah, blah.
Yeah. Check out We Are Robin or whatever. I was disappointed by this, and it's, again, it's not horrible, it's not poorly executed, it's an okay execution of really just not much.
Yeah, it would have been a nice B plot, so, you know, like the bonus 8 pages in the back of a Batman story or something. That could have worked as a support story for that would have fit in that vein, maybe. But that's all it is. It doesn't deserve to be its own comic. And I don't think it has no merit, because it is executed well enough, but it's still terrible. And so I gave it a D.
Wow. Okay. I can see that. I actually went with a C+ on the grounds of it had a beginning, a middle, and end. It told some stuff. I felt I got to know Lonnie a little better or whatever, but, and maybe part of what is undercutting this for me is the fact that Convergence is just around the corner. We're literally just a few weeks away from that. A lot of titles at DC are winding down, and it seems like this just doesn't matter. if this had happened in the middle of Zero Year, where all the stuff is ongoing and they're building up the universe or whatever, I might have felt differently. But this was average, slightly above. I didn't feel it was atrocious or something the creator should be embarrassed by. It just felt like they needed to fill a slot, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
I was going to go with the C-, but I really don't want anybody to just think it's slightly below average. I don't think they should read it. I really don't. I really don't think anyone else should read this.
I would agree with that, and I'm actually going to revise my rating down to a C-. Because it's like I said, it's still in that average category, but it's not worth reading.
Right.
There's no substance to it. But I do think it's better than what we usually see for a D comic.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm going to stick with the D, but...
That's fine. But not trying to change your mind.
But. I can definitely see we have had some other Ds that are much more poorly executed.
Yes. Much better examples of bad comics. How about that?
But yeah, but their mere existence didn't anger me as much.
This one didn't anger me. It sparked nothing.
Yes.
And the Anarchy character, if anyone who didn't read the Robin series that went for 100 and some odd issues with Tim Drake and stuff, Anarchy was well used. There were a lot of great characters. It was a great run. It did successfully what I think this issue was trying to do in terms of teen heroes and that sort of a thing.
Yeah, I'm building that run right now. Still have a ways to go, another 30 or 40 issues, but it looks like a really cool series.
It was. It was very enjoyable. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Howard the Duck number 1. This is a character I am familiar with, but I don't really consider myself a huge Howard the Duck fan. I've never seen the movie. I saw him at the end of Guardians, of course, for the
spoiler.
I think it's well known at this point. You think I should take that out?
No.
Okay. Remind me later about spoilers when we get to the general discussion section. I had an interesting thing on that today.
Oh, good.
But, you know, I never saw the old film. This is like the fifth series for him. Had the original one in 76, another one in 79, another one in 2002, 6 issues. That one I actually read. And then another one in 2007 that went for 4 issues. So it's like I said, I'm aware of the character, but it's more, I'm all in, I'll sample this, see what I think. How familiar are you with the character?
I saw the movie.
Oh, okay. So you're one up on me there.
Yeah.
The Howard the Duck movie, not the other one.
No, the Howard the Duck movie, yes.
Is it worth seeing?
No, I did not enjoy that. This was a long time ago, but it wasn't good. Okay.
It's one I've considered going and getting on DVD or Blu-ray just to see what it was, but that's about what I've heard.
No comic experience with Howard the Duck.
All right. I went in this as essentially something of a blank slate. Chips are...
Zdarsky,
thank you. And Joe Quinones on art, Chip on writing and stuff. They had an opportunity to make me either a fan or not of this character. And by and large, I think they did a damn good job. This is something that, you know, I liked how the character in his office was set up back at the end of She-Hulk a couple of weeks back. And I liked how She-Hulk and her office staff have a cameo here. This, to me, is continuity in action. It's nothing major, but it's showing, hey, this is a shared universe, and it actually is a way to transition readers from the one title to the other in a subtle way. And, I mean, they're different books, but over the course of this, I got to know and like Howard the Duck as a character. I thought this had a unique tone and style to it. I mean, just, you've got a walking, talking duck in New York. That in and of itself, I think, has some potential story juice, and they got some good story out of this. I thought it was an issue that had a good beginning, middle, and end, and it's continuing. It certainly doesn't end with the finality sort of a thing, but it had a very satisfying chunk of story in this issue, which is something I think a lot of books, like, say, the one we just talked about a moment ago, seem to lack. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't think it did a bad job. I liked some of the humor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked. There's a great sequence in here, a training montage sequence that is kind of musically inclined, and I thought that worked really well. And I kind of remember something like that from maybe an old Cartoon Network series or something. And I remember it was a good callback to that that style of humor, and it really worked for me. There was some jokes here that I thought were solid, some that fell a little flat, but all in all, I thought the humor worked for me. And you know, humor is very subjective in comics, so
oh yeah,
to each his own, and your mileage may vary on that. But I did think it was humorous. Yeah, the story was you know, kind of a heist story, and we had some cool cameos from different characters. I think Spider-Man didn't feel like Spider-Man, and then there were some shots at Spider-Man I thought he took that I was like, ooh, that seemed kind of mean-spirited, and so that interaction was kind of odd. But yeah, some of the cool cameos in here really worked well with the characters, and he works in this universe, which was very surprising.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to. I didn't think it was going to work at all. But it fits, surprisingly. And so, that was a pleasant surprise. It's not a flawless comic. It's got its issues, and I don't know how long I want to stick around with it, but it wasn't a bad first issue.
I agree with that entirely. I think it showed that the character fit in the Marvel Universe and fit firmly in the Marvel Universe. This wasn't one, hey, it just happened to be set there. We're told that. I mean, we see it left, right, and center. You know, I liked the use of Spider-Man up until kind of that last page he was on.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where it kind of threw me.
That's where it, yeah, I think they had some...
Can you cross a line with an imaginary character? If you can, I think they did.
Yeah. I mean, to me, there was a little bit of snarkiness in the writing there, and I get what they were doing and why, but...
It wasn't funny to me.
No, that was a joke that fell flat to me if mm-hmm. it was meant to be a joke.
And I'm sure it was meant to be a joke, but yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. But by and large, I mean, this was a fun take on the character. I don't know how it compares to previous ones, but if the series maintains this tone, this style, this quality... I'll stick with it. You know, it was a fun read. I enjoyed it. And this is a character, like I said, I had no real nostalgia or love or hatred for that matter going in. Mm-hmm. But it's a character with this team I would like to follow.
Yeah, there were some clever psych gags in here, some interesting visual gags that worked. And you know, he at one point he texts Spider-Man, and you know, he's a duck, so his texts are really hard to read. And well, I thought that was kind of cool. Is he? I don't know if it was because he's a duck or because he's older and he has trouble with texting. I wasn't quite clear, but it worked either way.
Yeah, either way it worked.
It was fun.
I also just like the panel above that when Spider-Man's getting to the rooftop.
Yeah,
the art there where he's flipping over off the wall and stuff. It mm-hmm. was well done.
Yeah, know? I mean that's really the most surprising is Chip Zdarsky does the art on Sex Criminals over at Image. And so I've never seen his writing except in the letters pages back there. And his humor is very blue. And I was like, how is he going to really temper this for what really could be and should be an all ages comic and very mm-hmm. accessible by a variety of ages? And I thought he did a pretty good job. It didn't really cross any lines too much as far as into the mature themes. And he surprised me as a writer, and pleasantly so. So all that being said, I thought it was a good comic and gave it a B.
I can see that. In terms of it being all ages, I totally agree that it was. And, you know, surprisingly so, because a lot of things with this T-plus rating from Marvel are not so much so. To me, this gets an A-. It took a character that I have known about for decades, but never bothered to follow, and got me interested in the character. It played well with continuity. It used it. It leveraged it well. It didn't get bogged down in it or anything. And it was a fun read, and by and large, it did everything I think a first issue needs to do in terms of setting up the character, the universe, the status quo, and giving me enough to know should I continue with the book or not. So...
Yeah.
Anyone who's got a pathological hatred of Howard the Duck or a general fear of ducks or whatever, yeah, steer clear. Everybody else, yeah, give it a shot. See if you like it. Shall we move on to our other book?
Sure.
This is Bill and Ted's Most Triumphant Return from Boom Studios. This is the first of six issues. This is, of course, Bill and Ted, best known from Wild Stallions, the band that will, you know, forever shape the universe. The creative team here is Brian Lynch, the writer. We've got Jerry Gaylord doing the art. And this is, of course, based on the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, those two movies. You've seen both movies, correct?
Okay. I've seen Excellent Adventure about 20 times, and I've seen Bogus Journey once.
You know,
so I really liked Excellent Adventure, and Bogus Journey, it was pretty forgettable.
I watched both movies the other night.
Okay.
They're short. They're 90 minutes. So it's like, you know, actually, I've got time to do it. I just needed some brain dead time, and that fit the bill.
It does fit the bill.
And I remember when I had seen the first one in the theaters back in college.
Oh, all
my friends were talking about it. So me and somebody else, we go. And for like the first 10 minutes, I think both of us were thinking, why are we watching this? And then you hit the Circle K, it kicks in, it's like, oh, okay. It's the first movie is just fun. It's brilliant. It's really well done. It's funny because the second movie, Bogus Journey, actually tended to, I believe, get better reviews, but I had like almost completely forgotten about just about every aspect of that story.
Yeah.
It's not as memorable. It's got its moments, but it feels off compared to the first one.
Right.
Which is just a zany, there is no villain. It's just how do these guys stumble through their day sort of thing. Whereas in the second one, there is a big bad. They get killed. There's heaven. There's hell. There's metaphysical stuff. They're trying to be, not deep, it's Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
But they're trying to be something. There was a big bad. They're trying to be something it wasn't.
And that's the biggest problem I have with this is I am well-versed in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the second movie, I was reaching back into brain matter that hadn't been used in a long time to try to remember some of those plot points from Bogus Journey, because unfortunately this happens right after that movie and is really rooted 90% in that universe. And instead of that first movie, it felt much more rooted in the Bogus Journey universe than the Excellent Adventure universe.
Well,
to me,
it takes place between the last scene in Bogus Journey and the credits, where they kind of do newspapers of here's how things pan out for them. And I thought this, while it certainly continuity-wise picks up literally right on the heels
of
Bogus Journey, I thought it was a really good blend of the two. It followed the characters. It treated both movies as having happened, having taken them seriously. But I think it recaptured the tone and the style of the first one better. And to me, it was a very... That's how Bill and Ted would have reacted to the events that happened, you know?
Wasn't there an animated show?
Not only was there an animated show, which I don't think I've ever seen any of, but Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter did the voices for Bill and Ted for the first season. By the time the second season came around, there was a live-action show of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, same name as the cartoon, but this was live action, which had Rick Overton as Rufus. Obviously, different actors for Bill and Ted. Those guys wound up doing the second season of the cartoon, and the cartoon switched studios between seasons.
Do you have the years on that by any chance?
I believe it was 1990, 1991 for both of those TV shows, thereabouts.
Okay.
It was about 13 episodes first season of the cartoon, then 8, and then I think the live action went 7 or 8 episodes. And I recall seeing parts of the live action one.
I recall those shows, but I don't think I was an avid watcher, but I remember them happening. And that's what I thought some of this stuff was from. Like some of the robot characters, I was thinking might have been from the animated show and not Bogus Journey.
Bogus Journey.
It is Bogus Journey.
It is Bogus Journey.
Okay.
Death Station, the robots and the kids. All of that was Bogus Journey. If anyone knows if they've got either the cartoon or the live action series out on DVD or Blu-ray or something. I did a little looking around, couldn't find anything other than I found on Amazon there was like a best of for the cartoon, but it seemed to have a lot, but not all. And it's like, well, if I'm going to bother with it, I may as well get the whole run if it's out there. What surprised me is this is not the first time Bill and Ted have been in comics.
Okay.
DC did an adaptation of Excellent Adventure in 1989, thereabouts. Then Marvel adapted Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And again, these movies were crazy popular back in the day. And they had Evan Dorkin do at Marvel Bill and Ted's Excellent Comic Book in 1991. And it went for 12 issues. I don't think I have any of them. As a matter of fact, I'm certain I don't have any of them. So I cannot speak to if they were any good or not. But this one, again, it followed the continuity. It played with the concepts fun. It got back more to the time traveling stuff and just how do these guys bumble through their lives. And it took what worked from the franchise and really leveraged it and acknowledged, frankly, the second movie, which while it may have been reviewed better by various critics, personally, I thought it was very forgettable and not that great of a film.
Right.
But they get some good mileage out of it with the villain from there and the other characters that they'd brought in and just how they'd built up the world. So this was pretty much everything I was looking for out of this, in terms of fun in the tone and style of the movies, etc. It's not overly deep, but neither were the movies. You know, I think the second one tried to be, but didn't quite work. And the art fit the style of the story, and the characters. I'm not going to say they were dead on likenesses, but they were recognizably the characters, which is the important part of it.
Yeah, there was also a backup story that was written by Ryan North and illustrated by Ian McGinty in the back. So it had its own backup story, which was kind of a different little futuristic time travel thing to like an Apple store.
Mm-hmm.
It was all right. It was okay. But the main story was a little better than that. But all in all, this, I guess it's probably more for to hit your nostalgia buttons, because I don't know that it worked that well as a comic for me. It was I could kind of feel the cadence of their voices from the movies. I could kind of get a sense for that every once in a while, but then it would kind of get off the rails and it wouldn't talk exactly like I imagined them talking. And then of course part of it also was me not having recently watched Bogus Journey. There was a lot of things I had to put together. I'm like, oh, I don't remember who that is, what those characters are. And so I had to put some of that together because it had been so long. And that hurt me a little bit with my enjoyment of this comic.
Well, totally, totally. When you figure Bogus Journey came out in 1991, so we're, 24 years later?
Mm-hmm.
Not having really recapped or whatever, because I don't think they even did that inside the front cover, did they? No, they didn't.
No.
They were taking some liberties on the continuity in terms of people remembering where the movies left off, and I think that's a highly unreasonable expectation. Had I not just seen Bogus Journey, I would have been puzzled where this was starting.
Well, I think when you have a cult classic status, though, with Excellent Adventure, the first one, I think you can get away with that. You can hop right on the tails of that because of the popularity of that movie and the fact that it was watched over and over again by a lot of people. I think you can kind of bank on it being all the tropes and all the plot points in there and all the characters really being pretty solidly in your readers' heads. Whereas Bogus Journey, I don't think rose to that level unless maybe it just didn't for me. And like you said, it was forgettable in a lot of ways. And I feel like they're kind of assuming that it was as important as the first one to folks. And I don't think it was. And I don't know if that's just me surmising wrong or whatever, but that's how I feel.
I kind of
went the wrong way with.
I think you're right. I think if Bogus Journey had the same wild appeal that Excellent Adventure did, there'd have been a third movie. I mean, to me, there's no question about that. I think Bogus Journey just didn't do quite as well, enough to justify that, because it was between the two where we got the cartoons, the comics, the live action TV show and such.
Right.
And they couldn't keep the franchise going. Now, there's talk of a third movie, but, I mean, there's been talk of it literally for decades, in terms of there was one that was going to happen shortly after Bogus Journey. I did some research because I was curious, so spent a little time on Wikipedia and some other places. The third movie, as recently as April 2014, so almost a year ago, third movie was still in the works, script was done, but no filming dates. There's other things saying they're doing more script stuff, that Death wasn't in it, they want to bring him in because that actor wanted in, stuff like that. And it would take place 20 years later of just kind of how their lives have gone or whatever. Maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't. But both Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter have, apparently been quoted as having said, yeah, it's moving forward. you know, Keanu, of course, having a much more impressive film resume over the intervening years,
right,
than Alex Winter, who played Bill. Which is
you weren't going to get him to do the third installment of this between Speed and Speed 2. But now he's cooled off enough. I think he's up for it.
Or between Matrix and the other Matrixes.
Exactly. He wasn't doing it then.
You know, he's he wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe he would have. He just thinks differently than a lot of people because when I was talking to a coworker was telling me that Keanu, for I forget which of the Matrix movies, gave out of his $114 million paycheck.
Holy moly.
$80 million of it to the people who did like the special effects and makeup and stuff like that. So, I mean, his comment, Keanu's, apparently it was along the lines of he's got more than enough money, you know, and these people did the work, so, you know, share the love kind of a deal. I forget the exact quote, but you know what I mean? Granted, he still made, what, $34 million or something on that film after giving away 80. So, I mean, a lot of actors make crazy money. Few do that sort of a thing.
I don't remember Robert Downey Jr. writing checks after Iron Man 3.
No. So if they can get a third movie going and stuff, that would be fun. This certainly felt like a story, not that they could do it now, because the characters here are still, again, the actors are older than the characters are now for this. But this would have been a fun third movie back in 92, 93 or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that there's an iconic aspect to these characters, but it's not as iconic as Doctor Who, Star Trek, some of the other long-lived franchises and whatnot. Witness the fact, on the cover, they got the phone booth wrong. At the top of it, it's saying telephone. In the actual films, now granted, I just watched them, so I know this, it just says phone. Not a big deal, but it'd be like getting the call letters wrong or whatever on the Enterprise or something. You know, but by and large, this was a fun read. I'm glad I rewatched the films. I hadn't seen them in ages, and I'm looking forward to the rest of this run. For me, this was a very solid B+. I think they hit the notes they needed to. They stayed true to the past stuff. The backup story, it was just kind of there for me. It didn't do much. But you know, I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was good.
Okay. I thought this was not bad, not great. It was right there in the middle for me. I don't think there's enough for me to continue with it. But there's also, it's not horrible. And I think it really depends on how much you enjoy the movies and
the how recently you've seen them,
and probably a little bit how recently you've seen them, and that'll help you. But for me, it's just a C.
That's fair. That's fair. I can totally see that. I mean, I think I would have been a lot harsher on this if I had not just seen Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
And I think that's the boat you kind of fell into, and understandably so.
I don't know if you recall the solicit. Did it say takes place after or picking up right where Bogus Journey left off or something like that? I can't remember.
This is by Boom Studios, so it's got the Why We Love It, Why You Love It, What It's About.
Yeah.
And so we'll skip the first two parts, because who cares? What It's About, it was following the time-traveling historic epic of the excellent adventure and the turbulent life and death of Bogus Journey, Bill and Ted must now fulfill their destinies, the inspiration for galactic harmony. How can somebody hate the Wild Stallions as much as the evil Chuck Denomalos? With the power of time travel, Bill and Ted set their sights on turning a young 20th century Anomalos' non-heinous attitude into something most outstanding in metal.
Yeah, you should have known going in. I should have known going in what I was going to get. And I should not have assumed that it was going to be rooted in the first movie as much as I thought it should be. So, yeah, that's on me.
Again, it's a 24-year-old movie.
Yeah, still a C for me.
Yeah, they should have banked on people remembering the highlights, not the specifics of the plot points.
Yeah. Now, the callbacks to Mom, Missy, those were funny. I'd forgotten that joke,
mm-hmm.
And it brought me right back into it because as soon as they said, I was like, oh yeah, that was great. That was a great part of that initial movie. So I thought that was fantastic, and there were some of those, not enough for me. I wish there was more.
Yeah. So all in all, it was a pretty decent week of comics for me. There were a few that seemed a little odd to me. Did you read Action Comics this week?
No, not yet.
It's Action Comics 40. It stars Bizarro. It's essentially a backdoor pilot for the Bizarro series, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Second Zero issue, right?
Kind of, sort of. And it makes sense to do that. It just, again, DC's in kind of a weird place right now, kind of sort of like it was pre-Flashpoint of we don't know what's coming entirely after Convergence, how much continuity maybe they will or won't keep or whatever. So, yeah, that was a little weird. And then despite having already gotten and read All New X-Men number 38, number 37 came out this week because, you know, they needed to keep up with Black Vortex or whatever that is. And we got the third issue of Ant-Man, and still have some issues with the way the character's portrayed, whatever, but it's a really fun read. I'm really enjoying that book these days. It took me a few issues to really get into the swing of it. I still think they don't take Cassie's continuity correctly and take it seriously and stuff, but the art's great, the story's fun, and if I just kind of let go of the continuity aspects, it's a great read.
The second to the last Miles Morales, oh, that really shocked me.
Yeah,
I've been having so much fun with this book. I hope it's one of those coming out of Secret Wars. It's a title that gets relaunched in some form or fashion. I really like it in the Ultimate Universe, and so I don't know if they're going to scrap that altogether. But man, this has been a great 11 issues, really 12 if you count that 200th issue that they kind of kicked off into this mm-hmm. book, and it's been a blast. I don't know how they're going to finish this up in one with one more issue. There's a lot of things to tie up, and so I haven't really heard what's happening here. I just look at the end where it said, you know, this is the penultimate issue or whatever, it's over. And for how long, I don't know. I don't know when it's coming back, but doggone it! I hate that when they end something too soon.
I fully expect Miles Morales to be around after Secret Wars. It would be a mistake to not hang on to that character. Now, whether they keep him as a Spider-Man or do something else, I don't know. But he could make a very interesting either Scarlet Spider or something. He's too good of a character to throw out.
But it's the supporting cast, I think, that really elevates this title. And
I think they could hang on to them, too.
Can they?
If after Secret Wars, there's basically this is the merged universe, essentially do what DC did at Crisis on Infinite Earths, or Flashpoint, for that matter, for a more recent example, or Zero Hour, if you need another example. If you give me a moment, I could probably come up with yet another, like, say, Infinite Crisis or 52. But I could see them maintaining the entire supporting cast in a very similar way to how they are now. The only thing that would have to change to have him located in the same New York as the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, and the rest of the 616 Marvel Universe is, do you have two Spider-Men running around? I don't think so. So you give him a different name, slightly different costume. Not even a different costume, just a slightly different name, you know?
Yeah, I hope we get some of these versions of these characters in the supporting cast with him somehow. Or just keep it as an Ultimate Universe somewhere, if you can do that. That'd be best.
I don't know. I think it'd be fun to see him playing around with the mainstream characters. I think they could do it without damaging.
Ganky and,
oh yeah.
But can you have Katie Bishop and Kate Bishop in the same universe? And
that gets harder.
You know, yeah, it gets a little complicated. I thought Superior Iron Man was yet another great issue, and I was just kind of lukewarm on the first issue of Superior Iron Man, but I've loved every issue since then. And this is a book that if you're not reading, you should be, because it's a great comic series.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Daredevil is kind of bowed out in recent issues, so it's actually back featuring Iron Man. We get some great stuff with Pepper, and it's I've been really enjoying it, not necessarily for all the right reasons, but it's well written. It's interesting. I just question how long they can keep Tony in this kind of mindset.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure he's in an Avengers book, too, and he's probably not acting anything like this, right?
I'm trying to think which Avenger books we're seeing him in these days, and it would only be probably New Avengers and Avengers itself. And he seems to be kind of before this point, mm-hmm. if he's in there at all these days.
Yeah, I just assumed he only existed in this book this way. And just like Hawkeye only existed in his book his way, and in other books he was different, you know?
Well, not different to the same extent. Hawkeye, it's just, is he actively being an Avenger or is he not? Whereas Iron Man, it's a totally different suit of armor, totally different attitude.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a different kettle of fish there. There have been some references as to Tony being a bit of a jerk and stuff like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're talking about superior Iron Man, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I thought Star Wars, third issue in, still solid. I'm still enjoying the heck out of this book,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really happy that we've got a 1-2-3 punch of Star Wars titles going on, and
another one or two coming out, too.
It's, yeah. I'm not sure if I'm going to I'll be as excited about some of these other. Was there something about Rebels? And
there was one that's like the last Padawan or something like that, or I forget what they are.
Yeah, I give them a shot, but I don't think they'll be in my wheelhouse as much as these first three have been. But I've really been super pleased with the way Marvel's handled it.
What about the one that's going to be leading into the movies? I forget what the title is, but they just announced that recently.
Oh, I don't know about that.
So I think Marvel's doing a great job with the property, putting A-list talent on it, taking it seriously. It's funny because it's a licensed property. It's certainly not an in-house property, yet it's still a house property in some way, shape, or form because it's part of Disney. And if they continue to put top-tier talent on it and stuff and treat it the way they're treating it, I think they could sustain Star Wars at or above the 100,000 level for quite some time. I mean, Batman's proven it can be done. It's just a matter of, do they want to do that? Do they want to put their A-list talent on stuff coming out of Secret Wars? Or I don't know. But it's a fun read. I'm enjoying how they're handling the Star Wars property. And I've got to imagine that the bigger readership is as much because it's from Marvel as also just also Star Wars is really back having a resurgence with the movies coming up and the cartoons and all that kind of stuff going on. It's a little bit of a shame that Dark Horse's stuff, which over the decades was brilliant at various places and times, and by and large never bad. Sometimes they went a little further afield and got away from the core characters, but you know that was fun too. It's a shame they never got the visibility and the sales that Marvel's currently having, because it was just as good stuff.
Oh, yeah. 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 How cool is it to have... Because I think the Star Wars titles, I think they're new readers. Some of them are new readers. Or lapsed readers at the very least, I would think, that a lot of those numbers, because those are significant sales numbers, over 100,000. And if it's sustainable, which it quite possibly could be...
I'm thinking it can be. Normally, I wouldn't say so, but Star Wars, I think it can be.
You know, it's... I think it's added some new readers to the pot, just like New 52 did. So that's cool. That's awesome.
I think not only is that great, but it coming out in the same week that I think a really solid Star Trek comic came out. Plus, in I guess it was last week that we got two Doctor Who comics and stuff. There's a lot of things that can be used to bring people out of TV and movies into comics successfully these days. So I think that's just awesome. And I'm hoping that with all of these things available that come Free Comic Book Day, which is kind of the annual open house for comic stores, that right. People will check these things out and we'll start slowly getting more people into the fold.
I think DC needs to get Astro City in a loot crate. And I think that would be pretty cool. Get that into some people's hands. Because that's now, what, 350,000 people that are subscribers to Loot Crate now? And that's just an instant top-of-the-chart deal if you can get into the Loot Crate.
Yeah, and, it's...
Give them away if you have to. Get Astro City in somebody's hands, because issue 21 was awesome.
Yeah.
It finished up that long story arc with Quarrel, about Quarrel and Cracker Jack, and it really said a lot of things and looked at superheroes and aging superheroes in a way that I haven't seen before in print. I'm sure it's occurred, but I haven't seen it.
Not like this.
And it was just a great, was four-issue arc?
Yeah, four-issue arc, brilliantly done. And there was an aspect near the end that I took as a potential teaser for something down the line. And
I'm feel like that.
I don't know where that would go, but let's see it sometime.
Let's explore that, exactly. Such a great, great issue that was.
Yeah, Kurt Busiek is doing a great job. I'm certain if they could get it into a loot crate and he had the advance warning, it would be geared towards getting new readers into the fold. Whereas I think some of the other things that have gotten into Loot Crate, not so much. Speaking of Loot Crate, I actually went ahead and signed up for it the other night.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Not trying to beat them, but it's like, okay, you know, Orphan Black topped the list because of that. It's like, you know, easiest way to know what's in a Loot Crate, order it. What the hell? I'll give it a shot. Not that I need more stuff. I've got plenty of stuff. But, you know, I'm curious.
It was like $18 a month or something like that if you get 3 months at a time.
$18, yeah. And, like you said, I'm curious how much of it would appeal to a hardcore comic book fan like myself. If listeners are interested, I could do kind of an unboxing episode or whatever on them. Via audio, I don't know how well that would work or whatever. I don't know if I'd want to try video for that or not. But, you know, something to think about. But what was funny is we're recording this on Tuesday. My article went up on Comic Book Resources this morning as we record this. Last week as people listen to this. And Orphan Black topped the list because it's in Loot Crate. Now, when I wrote the article over the weekend, I knew that it was probably in Loot Crate. What else would explain that level of sales of just shy of 500,000 units? And they had said that, you know, oh, we're going to have some exclusive Orphan Black thing you can't get anywhere else. I'm like, I can put two and two together. But I hedged my bets when I wrote the article and said, you know, well, here's the phrase they use. Presumably it's an exclusive cover, whatever. Well, between the time I wrote the article and the time the article goes up, Loot Crate puts out a press release clearly stating this is what it is. So, smart guys over at CBR, they thankfully, you know, correct that and go from conjecture to fact. You know, this is what's happening. And, you know, I trust these guys to make those edits. They're not going to do that if they haven't done their fact-checking. They're awesome about both keeping me honest and getting accurate stuff out there. I love that about them. But before I've even noticed this morning my article has gone up, within an hour of it going up, I got an email. Basically, you know, thanks for spoiling what's in my Loot Crate, dude. I didn't say dude. I watched too much Bill and Ted. And I'm like, does it even need Loot Crate needing a spoiler warning?
Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of people. It is. It's a surprise what they get, and they crack it open, and it's like Christmas for them.
I guess
it's just a bunch of cheap swag, but you know, whatever.
I hadn't seen it that way, and I apologize to the guy because, you know, I don't think it spoils his enjoyment of it much, if at all. But no. if he feels it does, who am I to say he's wrong? But that was, out of all the things I've said in all of the articles, to get that quick of a turnaround on a response on something, and that's what it is, kind of funny.
Well, it is the internet.
That is true. I've said other things that I thought would have sparked more comment than that. But no, like I said, I'm curious what's in the Loot Crate every month, because this is going to be, even though it was the February numbers, it's going to be in the March Loot Crate. So, as we record this, there's still a day or two that people could be ordering that stuff.
Well, it's probably still at sea somewhere.
Probably. For that big of a print run, yeah, I'd ship it overseas.
Isn't IDW having the shipping problems with the strike over on the West Coast or something?
The strike got resolved, but they do use overseas printers, and for that big of a one, yeah, find the cheapest price you can get.
Yeah.
Because it was sold at a discounted rate. I mean, a bulk purchase like that, go figure. Loot Crate's not going to pay top dollar for stuff. They're gonna swing deals. That's the whole point.
Now, I'm anxious. You and Sam talking about this week?
We're going to be recording on Thursday, so yes.
Because I'm curious, there's still another 150,000 copies unaccounted for besides Loot Crate, so that's pretty healthy numbers for an IDW book, too.
8 covers.
Still, 150,000 without the Loot Crate seems pretty good. I wonder how deeply discounted it was for all retailers.
For most retailers, not so much. When you're ordering, you know, 3 times what everyone else is ordering in total, you can swing a better deal. But the fact it had the 8 different covers, plus a pull list variant and stuff like that, that boosts the sales a little bit.
Yeah. This will be a great mail report to tune into because of all the titles that are over 100,000 and really some interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to that one.
I hope it's a great conversation. Sam's a great person to have those with. The coming months is just going to be really interesting with not so much interesting in terms of just, wow, there's always stuff to talk about, but wildly unpredictable. Convergence, Secret Wars, the number of new titles we're going to get in the coming months is just crazy. So I'm expecting 2015 in terms of the sales to be a very, I don't want to say turbulent, but very wild ride, and potentially both unpredictably so and unpredictable from so, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of how Convergence does, what does that really say about anything after it? You know, but, you know, I'm also getting a little tired of the loot crate du jour or nerd block or whichever, you know, one it is, spiking the sales on something. You know, it's a different kind of sales.
If it brings somebody else into the tent, I don't mind it.
I think it's, I don't mind it being in loot crate. I want to be clear on that. I think that's awesome. And bringing people in, this is a great way to do it. I mind Diamond reporting it as if it's just like all the other sales. Comics are a pre-order business, and whether readers pre-order or not, the retailers do. Most of the sales that we see on the Diamond numbers are reflective of interest or perceived interest on behalf of the retailers of what readers want to read. Loot Crate and Nerd Block or anything of the sort, totally different beast. It's a bulk purchase. It's akin to a promotional item. It's what their buyer thinks would be cool to put into one of the boxes. And it has very, very little, if any, causal relationship on sales after that. At least none that we've seen. So if it can bring people into the tent, that's great. I think the number of people it's bringing in, hell, even if it's a percent or two of the total people who get nerd block for any given thing, that's worth doing.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Again, totally different type of sales.
And yeah, you'll have to tell me when you get your box. And it'd be cool if whoever gets their comic placed in Loot Crate, if they capitalize on that, assume that they're new readers, assume that they don't know what their next step should be, and how do they call to action and convert that new person and new experience into a sale? Do they put a coupon for a Comixology download, or do they stick an ad in their comics about, you know, comicretailer.com, comicshop.com, whatever the one is where you can find out where the closest comic book place is.
There are a couple of ones for finding out comic stores. I know Diamond has one, Comic Book Resources has one.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they're not leveraging it to, this is where to go to get the next issue, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, because I don't know how far in advance they are making those deals. I mean, I'm sure it's at least 3 or 4 months. So it will probably be enough time to have something locked and loaded. If we get this deal done with Loot Crate, we don't want them just to get this comic. We want them to get the next comic that they're not going to get in Loot Crate. And how do we get them to do that?
Exactly. If they're not taking it with that attitude, whichever the publisher is, you know, they're missing an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I would hope, maybe not for the next Loot Crate, but possibly the one after it, which would be around the second month of Convergence, if DC was forward-thinking, I don't want to say smart or clever, because the people there are smart and clever, but if they were to have something in there that is basically, here's a promo of everything coming out of Convergence, you know, all the new titles and all that stuff, with a, hey, go check this out when it comes out. You know, simply a sampler issue of everything. You know, imagine if you got your Loot Crate and it's just, wow, this is heavy this month. And you've got something that's the, you know, equivalent of almost a trade paperback or phone book. And thump, here's an 8-page sample of everything coming out from DC coming, you know, next time.
Or whatever their free comic book day offerings are. I mean, they're already going to be distributing those for a quarter a piece. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't get much cheaper than that. At least have a free comic book day book in the Loot Crate that month.
No, it's one thing to do that, though, but imagine if coming out of Secret Wars, as that's ending, you get your Loot Crate, and here's a thick thing of every, you know, previewing every mm-hmm. new comic that's coming out. You
yeah.
know, that could work. It'd be expensive, but, you know.
If I was DC, I would do it with Injustice, Year 4, number 1, whenever that's coming out around that time. I would put that in there. Hopefully it's an awesome starting point because it's really been working. And I would have something where it walked you through setting up your Comixology account, getting that next issue locked in, and how you could automatically get each installment after that. I would get mm-hmm. them going down that road because I think that's the right audience for Comixology and subscribing to comics. That way, I think that they really need to go. That would really be an opportunity to capitalize on that.
Well, I've thought for years Comixology really ought to do a discounting of issues based on you've gotten the previous couple.
Yeah.
So if you get one, you get a 1% discount on the next. You got two in a row, you get a 2% on the next. And obviously, it'll cap at some point. But it's one of those that once you break the chain, well, now you're back to full price. So you're almost better off getting that missing issue.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great idea.
Something to keep people coming back, to let them know when those next issues are out and stuff.
I mean, like your local comic shop gives you pull list discounts, you know, you'll get 10% off if you buy so many, if you have so many comics in your pull list each month, and free bags and boards and stuff like that. You know, that they should definitely do that with Comixology. And, you know, if it's something that you're each and every month you're going to get and it's in your subscription, then yeah, discount it, give it, especially digitally. My goodness.
Incentivize the reader to come back for the next issue.
Yeah. When we take over, we'll show them how it's done.
Yeah, that's my plan. Anything else? Does it pretty much do it?
That'll do it.
Cool.
Join us next week for Supergirl number 40 from DC, Princess Leia number 2 from Marvel, and Chrononauts number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.